change around my team. Yeah, we off the leash. You could look us in the eyes, see we have peace. Black and gold, that's the colors when we go to war. When we step up on that field, you gon' hear my roar. We them Tiger Cats, we them Tiger Cats. We them Tiger Cats, we them Tiger Cats.
Yeah, nobody hitting harder. Better keep your guard up, cause with everything we draw, we can score it when we wanna.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, it was pretty ugly on Saturday afternoon, but they don't ask how, they just ask how many, right, buddy? Ticats win 21-7 over the Ottawa Red Blacks, finally getting that monkey off their back after going 0-4 against them last year. How'd you feel about this one, pal? I'll admit this was a bit of a snoozer, a bit of a bore. It was a tough game to watch, but coming out with a 2-touchdown win, I'll take that no matter how boring the game is, won't you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the first half was really boring. It ended up 4-1, the Ticats leading, but it picked up a bit in the second half. You know, Hamilton started putting it together. Yeah, they scored 17 points in the second half opposed to just 4 in the first. So, yeah, a bit of a snoozer in the first half and, you know, basically the whole game. But it did pick up a little bit in the second half.
It's another one of those games where I look at the Ticats and not that they would have lost this game in the past, but they're finding – I mean, I think we talked about it last week. They're finding different ways to win. We've seen them when they're mostly healthy, blow teams out. We've seen them now struggle with injuries. Obviously, the biggest one to Jeremiah Mazzoli, but we've seen them lose Dalvin Breaux. We've seen them lose Jamal Westerman. We've seen Brandon Banks sit for a game. Ted Laurent got hurt in this one and missed some time. Adrian Tracy got hurt late in the game and was forced out. So, like, this team's dealt with injuries, and yet they keep winning. You know what I mean? Like, again, it's maybe not the prettiest football we've ever seen, but at the halfway point of the season, we're talking about a 7-2 football team. I mean, I'll take that any year. I don't care how they win. I don't care what it looks like. They could win 1-0 every week and I'd be happy. Wins are wins, man.
Yeah, absolutely. It's 7-2. I can't believe the Ticats have that record right now. And you look at the schedule going forward and it's quite possible we could be, you know, the next two games are very winnable. We could be 9-2 with 7 games remaining. So, you know, we're gonna get to that benchmark of 9 wins pretty much halfway through the season, which I thought was impossible.
Well, I mean, you didn't think you thought they'd win just 9 games all year. So to get there by Labor Day, I mean, it's the type of egg on your face that you're happy to wear, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
I would
it just show, you know, the Jeremiah Mazzoli goes down, but it just shows how good this team is as a collective that we're still putting wins together.
Yeah, and like I said, they're winning in different ways. In this one, offensively speaking, they weren't that great. There were some standout performances. We'll get to those in a second. But when you look at the offense as a whole, they struggled. Like I said, it was 4-1 at halftime. So the offense struggled a bit, but they picked it up when they needed to. And I think a lot of the credit for that goes to one player in particular, and that's Braylon Addison. This guy, man, I've talked about it on 3-down. I think I've talked about it on here. His tenacity when he has the football, it's almost like the first guy never brings him down. And I know that that's being hyperbolic, but it feels that way. Like, there was one catch in this game, his biggest catch. I think he went for like 38, 39 yards or something. He catches the ball in the middle of the field, and he's got 3 Red Blacks defenders around him. And he gets out of there, bounces off another one, and takes the ball 40 yards downfield. Like, that's not supposed to happen. Like, I was watching the game with my dad, and it happens, and I'll self-edit here, and he goes, how the F did he get out of that? And it's like, it almost seems like every time he has the ball in his hands, the first guy just does not bring him down. He finished the game with 8 catches for 100 yards, both team highs, both game highs. He also added 5 carries for 16 yards. So he had 13 total touches for 116 yards, and he's making the most of every opportunity. This is a guy that we talked about going into the season. We had some high hopes for, right, Mike? And we had that worry, the Brian Timms worry that we've talked about a few times before. But he's on pace for a 1,000-yard season. Brandon Banks didn't have a great game in this one, just 2 catches for 24 yards, and Braylon Addison was the guy that kind of benefited from that. And it shows me when guys like Addison step up, he might be the number three receiver on this team, but he's capable any game of being the number one, and he showed that against Ottawa.
Yeah, he reminds me of Banks a little bit in that he has that speed, but he's also, you know, he's a thick dude. He's a strong guy, and like you saw in that play you mentioned, he can just fight off tackles at will. So he's been great this year. Definitely not, you know, a sophomore slump for him. And another receiver I'd like to talk about was Luke Tasker.
Oh, absolutely. I knew you'd bring him up.
Yeah, he was the second leading receiver with 83 yards, 6 receptions. But it seems like he's being used as a check down to Dane Evans. He seems to be like one of the last options, and he'll pass it to him underneath. But like I've said many times on this podcast, Luke Tasker just finds a way to get that first down, and he did it many times in this game.
Well, there was that one drive. I don't remember if it ended in a touchdown or an interception. I can't remember, but he was targeted on 3 straight passing plays. The first one he caught, like you said, kind of in the middle of the field, broke a tackle, turned it upfield, picked up like 20-something yards. Next one, picked up another first down. Like, that's just what he does. He's the guy that goes across the middle, will sit inside there. You hit him for 8, he picks up 12. Like, it is – Luke Tasker's not going to beat you deep very often. I know he has some long touchdown catches and stuff like that, but he's your slot guy that kind of sits in the middle of the field and takes a beating when he catches things across the middle. But 6 catches for 83 yards, second best on the team. And this came a week after he had 1 catch. And, again, this also shows that sometimes guys will get targeted a lot. Sometimes guys get taken away. But every week there's so many weapons on this team. That other guys step up. We've seen Brandon Banks obviously have huge games. We've seen Braylon Addison have big games. And we've seen Luke Tasker do well when called upon. It's just the number of weapons that this offense has, it might not be the star that has the big game, but someone's going to have a big game in the receiving core every week.
Yeah, it's not like we have, you know, a receiving core filled with superstars. You know, we have Banks. He's a big star. Tasker's been around for a while. He's a star. But the other guys are just young fellas. And another young guy that really stepped up, even though his numbers weren't huge, was Jalen Acklin. He had 2 huge catches on a drive, one to get a first down, and then the next one, he made a beautiful move on the DB to get into the end zone. I was thoroughly impressed with this kid.
Yeah, and that was the touchdown that kind of sealed the game. Like, I remember watching the game, and when they scored, I turned to my dad, and I go, this is over. Like, with the way Ottawa's offense was playing and how Hamilton's defense was keeping them completely in check, 2-touchdown lead, the Ticats weren't giving that up. And yeah, I agree with you. The move he made on the touchdown catch to shimmy off the first tackler in his way was pretty impressive. And again, this just goes to show you another guy. Like you said, his numbers won't like pop off the page. What was it? I'm trying to look here. What did he have?
Three catches for 46 yards.
Like, that's not...
Yeah.
You're not going to, you know, erect a statue for the guy at Tim Hortons Field because of those numbers, but he made a couple of clutch catches, found the end zone, and pretty much salted the game away on that drive. And that was a great drive, I think, from Dane Evans as well. And I think we've seen a lot of growth. I think what we've seen from Dane Evans, I think, is kind of what I think we expected. Like, he shows flashes where he can be the guy, and then he does things where it shows that he's inexperienced. But you look at the numbers, 24 for 39, 299 yards, touchdown, 2 picks. Get to 2 picks in a second. But, I mean, nearly 300 yards, guides them down the field. I mean, you can't really ask for much more out of your quarterback than salting the game away with a very impressive drive late in the game.
Yeah, and if you look at his numbers, Dane Evans is he's getting more passing yards each game. Each game he's accumulated more yards passing. So, and this is obviously the most passing he's had, almost 300 yards. I like what I see from him. You're right. It's going to be up and down. You know, he's a young quarterback playing his first professional ball, but I like what I see so far.
There was something that I want to say Matt Dunnigan pointed it out after the game. It might have been Henry Burris. It was one of the two. They pointed out, because this was a live mic game, right? So late in the game, I think it was like minute and a half left, Ty got the ball, and they go two and out. And you hear Evans on the mic going, guys, we got to be better than this. We got to put the game away. We have to, when we get in these positions, kind of, we have to put it, like, that shows leadership for a young guy. And that's one of those things that I've seen a lot of criticism of Evans that, oh, he doesn't command the huddle. And I think that's nonsense. I think when you hear things like that, when you hear him kind of self-evaluating, like, hey, man, we got to be better. And he's talking about himself as well. I think that bodes well for this team going forward. When you have a quarterback that may be inexperienced, but I think, at least from what I see, guys are willing to follow his lead. And I think that that is something that can lead the Ticats to a lot more victories as the season goes on.
Yeah. And another thing that's going to help him is a good running game. And, you know, it's been a little bit down lately. You know, throwing in some guys that might not necessarily be able to handle the load. But I really liked what I saw from Cam Marshall in this game. 12 carries, 92 yards, 7.7 yard average, a long of 20. Every time he touched the ball, it just seemed like good things happened. Not the fastest guy in the world, but he was running over some people, and it was fun to watch.
Yeah, it sure was. Reminded me of Jerome Bettis. I don't know if you remember him, the old Pittsburgh Steeler, L.A. Ram, Notre Dame fighting Irish running back from you know, 20-some-odd years ago. Maybe 15 years ago now. He's a bull. He doesn't have that breakaway speed. I mean, he's capable of making some long runs, but he's a guy that's going to get those tough yards, and he was getting some good blocking in front of him, was able to hit the hole. Yeah, I really liked what I saw out of Cam Marshall. I really liked what I saw out of the run game kind of in general in this one. I wrote for three down. If you took away the quarterback rushes, this team ran like 23 times for like 125 yards, something like that. Like, I mean, they threw the ball 39 times. They run the ball about 25 times. I mean, that's a lot of plays to run, but you know, you get that mix going forward. I think that can only mean good things for the Ticats as the season goes on. You can get the run game that involved, even if it's not just with Marshall, if you're using, you know, a Braylon Addison or Brandon Banks or an Anthony Coombs or like Malik Irons when he comes back or Sean Thomas Erlington when he returns. Like, if you're mixing and matching these guys and you can get this type of production, it's only good things for the Cats going forward, no?
Yeah, I mean, 12 carries from Marshall, but you also had Coombs carrying the ball four times. Addison carried it five times. Banks had two attempts, so yeah, I like how they're spreading it out. You know, it doesn't all have to go to Marshall. They do the end around plays to try to confuse the defenses. Are they going to hand off the ball? Are they going to hand off the ball up the middle? Is he going to keep the ball? I like what they're doing with that.
Yeah, to touch back up on Evans, not really Evans, but it's just something I want to touch on of the offense as a whole. It was mentioned during the game that with the two red zone interceptions that Evans threw, the Ticats now lead the league in a bad way with five turnovers in the red zone. I think this is something that, while not super concerning because they're still 7-2, this is one of those things that you kind of hope to see them eradicate, because in this game, they left on the field, so to speak, two touchdowns and a field goal when there was like a miss. Like, I think the snap was high and Tasker couldn't get it down. That's probably at a minimum 17 points, maybe even 19 points. You add that to what the Cats have in this one, you're talking a 40-7, you know, 38-7, 36, you know what I mean? Like, you're talking a massive blowout in this one if they were able to convert when they got in deep. And the two red zone interceptions, I mean, one wasn't really his fault. I mean, he put the ball in a weird place, but the receiver fell and it was intercepted. And then the other one was just I guess he just didn't see the safety in the end zone when he was looking at Banks. But that's a little concerning. And this is not something that's Evans' fault. This, obviously, he has the two red zone turnovers. Mazzoli threw interceptions in the red zone as well. I think we can remember from earlier in the season in a couple of games where he got them in deep and turned the ball over. So it's not just a Dane Evans issue. But, man, this is something I would like to see them clean up.
Yeah, I remember last year when June Jones was running the show, and our red zone offense seemed to be really, really efficient. You know, a lot of passes to Tasker in that area. It's going to take some time for Dane Evans to really hone his game when he's down, you know, inside the 20-yard line. But, yeah, you're right. It has to get better, because as we get later in the season, we're going to have to turn, like, not every time we get in the red zone, but, you know, we're going to have to get more sevens than we do threes, for sure.
Yeah, last thing I want to talk offensively, Mike, is the offensive line. We'll talk good and bad here because there's a little mix of both. They gave up two sacks, according to the stats, but One of them was on David Watford on a designed quarterback run where he got tackled. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't really consider that. If it's a designed run, how is it a sack, even if he's tackled behind the line of scrimmage? So they gave up one sack. But I thought for most of the game, Evans had time, wasn't really pressured. Ottawa's defense is really good. I think you could say that their offense sucks, but their defense is very talented. Run by Noel Thorpe, so obviously we know they're going to be pretty good. I thought the Ticats offensive line handled them well. I think they paved the way for Marshall to have the game he had. I really liked what I saw out of the O-line in this one. I know you're a big guy for the O-line, so what, are you going to heap some praise on him too?
Yeah, they've been amazing all year long. I mean, if you look at the sack totals, I don't have them in front of me, but I'm pretty sure they lead the league in that category. So they had another great game. Like you said, they opened up the holes for Cam Marshall. It made it look easy for him, and one sack. So if you're giving up one sack a game, I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take that. What I won't take, though, Chris Van Zyl, who I think is far and away the Ticats' most outstanding offensive lineman nominee at this point of the season. I think he will be going forward. Took a couple of really dumb penalties. I mean, he took one dumb penalty and one kind of understandable one, but two 15-yard flags, kind of tough. I know you on the one where I think it was the second, because the first one he's like pulling a red black player off the quarterback, which a little unnecessary, but at the same time, I think you maybe accept those ones because he's protecting the QB and telling this, basically saying, get the hell off my quarterback. The second one was one of those, like, he's running up and oops, I ran into you and knocked a guy in his ass sort of thing. And those are just silly. And I think you heard Dane Evans after that one go, we got to be smarter than that. We're in the red zone. They went on to score. I think that was the Ackland touchdown. So they went on to score on that drive anyway. But at the same time, I mean, yeah, Chris Van Zyl is a veteran in this league. He's got to know not to take penalties like that too often.
Yeah, I think he's a bit of an emotional guy. He likes to
He plays on the edge.
Yeah, he does. And sometimes he's going to go over the edge, I guess. And, you know, we haven't seen a lot of that this year, so hopefully we won't see anything like that in the future because, you know, taking two 15-yard penalties in one game is too much.
Yeah. You know what? There's one other thing I want to talk about. What did you think about the play calling in this one? And specifically, I want to bring up the second and goal from the three. And this is actually the one that was counted as the sack on Watford. They bring in the short yardage team. Is that a classic overthink for you, Mike? Because for me, I'm wondering, you're on the 3-yard line. Why are you running a QB sneak on this? That didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense to me either. I was kind of miffed about that at the time. I mean, you bring in David Watford from the 3-yard line. I could see from the one. Yeah, sure. I mean, go for it. It's pretty much, you know, he's going to get in there like he did later on in the game. He did the exact same play from the 1-yard line. And it was an easy touchdown. But, yeah, from the three, I think you leave Dane Evans in there and, you know, they don't do a QB plop from the three. That's the main thing I take out of that.
Yeah, it felt to me like they just overthought it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand what either Tommy Condell or Orlando Steinhauer were thinking. It's been the rare coaching miscue in a situation like this. We haven't seen a lot of those this year, you know, because the coaching staff is so, experienced in the CFL. But yeah, this one, again, there's four more points off the board because they settled for a field goal on that drive. Like, as low scoring as this game was, if the Ticats would have made both some better play calling decisions and some better, as the players, making some better decisions protecting the football, this could have been a really ugly blowout.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would like to see teams or Hamilton in particular go for it if they're like within the 3-yard line, if it's third down. I mean, if you turn over the ball, so be it. I mean, they're stuck deep in their end. It's not that bad. But I'd like to see teams overall maybe go for the touchdown instead of kicking a field goal from the 2-yard line.
Well, I agree. And especially with how the defense was playing in this game. And I guess this is a good time to flop over to that side of the ball. They allowed no touchdowns. The quarterbacks threw for under 50% combined because, as you know, if you watch the game, for a spell in there, they pulled Dominic Davis and put Jonathan Jennings in there. Ottawa wasn't really until the end of the game when the Ticats were kind of playing prevent up by 2 scores where they really made any moves down the field. I mean, you go for it third down from the three. Even if you pin them, even if you miss it, you pin them at the three. What are they doing? Maybe they get a first down and punt. Maybe they concede a safety. Like, this defense in this game, like, was absolutely tremendous. There wasn't anything really that you could say. Like, we were able to pick apart some negatives offensively. Is there anything we can pick apart defensively that's a negative?
Not really. You know, going like how this D line has played this year, you'd expect maybe a couple more sacks. There was only one sack in this game, but I thought the secondary was lights out this game. Absolutely lights out.
Well, I mean, there was a couple big plays. There was one big run play Moses Madu had. Otherwise, he was completely shut down. So the run D, a week after giving up, what was it, a 125 to John White, they give up 55 to Moses Madu, and he's really not a factor.
A good running back.
He is a good running back, but 55, nine carries, 55 yards, 35 of them came on one run. So that's eight carries for 20 yards. You know, I mean, the run D, we've gone back and forth on this all year. They were tremendous in this one. I agree with you in the secondary. Now, a lot of people are going to point out that Ottawa's offense is not very good, and Dominic Davis and Jonathan Jennings are not very good. And I tend to agree with that. But for the most part, Ottawa, like, you look at the receivers for Ottawa, Dominic Grimes had 73 yards and a long of 47. So, again, one big play there. You look then and you see, okay, Caleb Hawley had 83 yards. All right, it's not bad, but then you see the big guy, Brad Snopley, three catches for 34 yards. Like, they didn't allow much of anything in this, and this was, I think even more impressively, without Delvin Bro. So you have Jamal Roll playing on the corner to the short side. Yeah, I mean, if you were to tell me missing Delvin Bro, this is what the secondary would have done, imagine what they could have done with Bro in the lineup.
Yeah, there was a lot of pass deflections in this game. Mm-hmm. You know, one from Frankie, four from Brooks, one from Roll, one from Adeleke, one from Leonard, and one from Murray. So they were knocking down a lot of balls this game. And, you know, Dominic Davis isn't that good. He was 20 of 40. I mean, that's a lot of passes, but not a lot of completions. And Jennings came in for a little bit, and he was terrible as well. So we weren't playing the best quarterbacking duo, but still a tremendous performance by those guys.
10 total. I mean, you mentioned all the individual numbers, but 10 total pass deflections, pass knockdowns. I mean, I don't follow that religiously, and I might have to go back and look, but I don't think I've ever seen double digits in knockdowns whenever I've looked at the Ticats box score at the end of the game. That's impressive. That shows one of two things. That shows either that they're in such tight coverage that the quarterback has nowhere to go and is forced to throw it into coverage, or that the quarterbacks that they're playing don't know how to make the proper read. Now, I think it's a little bit of both, to be fair, but I remember late in the game when the Red Blacks were kind of driving to maybe try to get back into this game. I know it was very late, but they were still, you know, making some plays and still playing to win. I think it was they were inside the 10 and they threw three passes all incomplete, and a couple of them, Davis is scrambling and there's just nobody open, and the one he had to throw away. And to me, if a quarterback is breaking the pocket and is kind of roaming free and is scrambling around and has time to look for his receivers and can't find anyone open, that tells me that defense, was the secondary in particular, was just hounding their players. That to me is incredible. When you see quarterbacks break the pocket, you see there's a lot of chaos in those situations. And the Ticats secondary must have been super sound for him to roll all the way to the wide side of the field and toss one out of bounds.
Yeah, and it was a time in the game where desperation was really high for the Red Blacks. I mean, to just throw the ball away out of bounds and waste a down, essentially, it shows that they really had nothing to look at. No open receivers at all.
All right, so special teams-wise, Mike, we don't have really anything to talk about. There wasn't a big return. There wasn't, like, in either, like, positively or negatively. Like, Frankie Williams had a nice return to start the game. But other than that, it was pretty quiet on the special teams front, which is fine. So let's just move right into who this week's Podsky Player of the Week will be. And, Mike, why don't you let everyone know who we've selected?
This week's Podsky Player of the Game is Mr. Braylon Addison. He had eight receptions, for 100 yards, 12.5 yard average, a long of 38, and a highlight reel catch and run, breaking all those tackles for that 38 yard long gain. So Braylon Addison, player of the week, Podsky, player of the week.
Yeah, very, very well deserved. He's becoming a big fan favorite in my household, and I'm sure amongst households of Ticat fans around the country. He's a fun guy to watch.
Absolutely. He's just a playmaker, end of story.
Yeah, get the ball in his hands and good things happen. So now is usually the time where we would delve into some Ticats news and talk about signings or injuries or what have you, but the last week's been kind of quiet on the Ticats front, so I thought it'd be fun, Mike, for you and I to kind of take stock of the team as we hit the official midway point of the season. We've now played 9 of the 18 games this season, and as we mentioned before, the Ticats are 7-2, and the last time the Ticats hit the midway point of the season with a 7-2 mark was 1998, so it seems that there's a lot of talk about those late 90s Danny McManus teams and comparing them to this Ticats team this year. A lot of things that this hasn't happened since 99. This hasn't happened since 98. And another thing that hasn't happened since way, 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 way back then was a 7-2 start. So, Mike, obviously we remember at the beginning of the season you said this is Ticats football. They're going to finish no better than 9-9. We hit the midway point of the season. They're at 7-2. You got to be over the moon right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I grossly underestimated them because this team has put out a tremendous effort so far halfway through the season. You know, Mazzoli was doing great in there. The offense was really clicking. And then he goes down and Dean Evans comes in and he's done a formidable job filling in. You know, the run game isn't at the height that I would expect it to be at right now, but injuries have played a big role in that. And I think we're going to get back to running the ball more and getting more yards on the ground with a rookie quarterback behind center. So overall, I'm very, very pleased. I mean, the defense has been lights out. The defensive line is incredible. And the offensive line is incredible. Both lines are probably our best positioning groups on this team, which is hugely important. So overall, special teams, defense, and offense have been really good so far. I know that it's been a bit of a downfall with the offense, but I think Dean Evans more time in there, and they'll be clicking as well.
Yeah, I think if there's one silver lining to take from Mazzoli's injury, and I think we might have talked about this when it happened, is that it allows Dane Evans to get a lot of experience heading into the playoffs. And I think, mm-hmm. I know 7-2 and there's still half a season left to play. I feel fairly confident in saying that the Hamilton Ticats are going to make the playoffs in 2019. In fact, I'm almost willing to go as far as to say the East Final is going to be at Tim Hortons Field. We're going to talk about the Alouettes in a bit, and I know that they've kind of, there's been a resurgence in Montreal thanks to guys like Vernon Adams and William Stanback and Kahari Jones as head coach. And look, the Owls are a division rival, but it's kind of nice to see something new. I mean, we had the Owls for so many years, and then Calvillo retired, and then they've kind of been crap since. It's kind of nice to see them come back, give us a new rival as we watch the Argos and the Red Blacks kind of fall. But I feel fairly confident, Mike, in going forward with this team, that this team is going to win 10, 11, 12, 13 football games. They're going to be first place in the East. The East Final is going to be in Hamilton at Tim Hortons Field with one game away from the Grey Cup. I know it's early, but I see no signs as to why this team, the offense, I think is just going to get better as the season progresses with Dane Evans getting more experience and more comfortable in there. I think the defense, what more can you say about the defense? They've been tremendous. I don't see them dropping off anytime soon, unless there's a rash of injuries. And of course, injuries, obviously, we can never predict. So if there's a bunch of injuries, obviously anything can happen. And special teams for this, every time this team's needed to play on special teams, we saw it 2 weeks ago against the BC Lions. They needed a return to set themselves up for the winning drive, and they got it. So anytime this team's needed special teams to kind of make a play, they have. I don't see that changing going forward. I really like what is built here in Hamilton with Orlando Steinhauer. And I see no reason why this team can't go all the way.
No, neither do I, especially with the rash of QB injuries. And I know that, not all the quarterbacks are going to be out for the full season. A lot of them will be back for the playoffs. But I think this team can, for sure, contend for a Grey Cup. I think they can, depending on what Montreal does or whoever the crossover team is in that East final game, it's not going to be easy, whoever it is. But I think that they have the tools here to make a run for a Grey Cup, finally. It's been 20 years since they won one. It'd be kind of fitting if they could pull it out this year.
Yeah, 20 years since the last one, they win it with a backup quarterback. No one, it's been the year of the backup quarterback, so it wouldn't surprise me if a backup QB is the guy that leads his team to a championship. And why couldn't it be Dane Evans? I think we've seen growth from Evans every week. And you have some numbers on kind of the splits between the Ticats under Mazzoli and the Ticats under Evans. And not to, bury the lead here, Mike. Obviously, and I think this will surprise no one, the numbers have dipped since Evans took over. But I think. And you'll obviously mention the numbers in a second, but I think going forward, I feel like the offense can only improve. The more Evans plays, the more comfortable he gets, the better he'll play. I think that that's the case for any player, but especially quarterbacks, right? I think the more a quarterback gets time on the field, the better they're going to play.
Yeah, they got to build up that chemistry with the receivers, and I think they're taking turns doing that. I mean, the Banks has a big game last week. Addison has a big game. Tasker has a really good game this week as well. So he's going to build up that chemistry, and you're right, it's just going to get better. But you mentioned some of the numbers, and these are taken, the 5 games with Mazzoli, and then we will compare it to the 4 games that Dane Evans has led the team. So we'll start with the offensive side of the ball. 37.4 points per game with Mazzoli, and 24.5 with Evans. So obviously that's taken a dip, and that's not all in the offense. I mean, obviously there's points scored on defense, on special teams, but those are what the numbers come out as. How do you feel? That's a 13-point dip.
Yeah, we can't forget there was a 64-point scoring game in
That's
there
true.
as
That's
well.
true.
There were a couple of blowouts with Mazzoli, and that doesn't surprise me. I mean, 13 points is actually not that bad. Like, what was it? What did you say? 25 points per game with Evans in the lineup?
Yeah, it's not too bad.
No, it's not like that. That's middle of the pack, and I think that's kind of what you would expect from a quarterback who now has what, 4 career starts. And I mean, he played a lot in that Winnipeg game, so maybe we can say he's played in like kind of 5 total games. I mean, he's guiding the team to almost 4 touchdowns a game with his defense. I mean, that's good enough to win most games. And I mean, they're 2-1 with Evans as a starter, 3-1 if you count the relief effort against the Bombers. So I mean, they're finding ways to win football games. I don't think that 37 points per game was sustainable over the course of the season. I mean, I would have liked it to have been, of course, but I mean, there were a couple of blowouts in there, a couple of big point scoring games. So, I mean, I'm not surprised that the numbers have taken a dip, though.
Right. Now yards passing per game, 324.4 when Mazzoli was in there, 230.5 when Evans has been in the game. And I mentioned that it was 4 games. I considered that game that Mazzoli went out Evans' game.
Yes, me
No, I
too.
didn't. Yeah, okay.
So
So
what,
yeah,
Mazzoli
there's a
only
bit of
played
a
what, like
dip
10
there.
minutes in that game?
Yeah, so, right. Yeah, it's pretty much Evans' game. So there's a bit of a dip there, almost 100 yards, but we're finding ways to win, so you just expect it with the young quarterback.
Well, and like you said, his Evans passing totals have gone up every game. So we saw him hover around the low 200s. I think maybe Saskatchewan might have even been under 200 yards passing. Then we saw him, what, I think he was 260, 240, 260 against the Lions, and now we see him approach the 300 yard mark. So again, like I said, I think just with time, he's going to become more confident, more comfortable, and I think the numbers will improve.
Absolutely. And interceptions per game, 1.2 with Mazzoli and 1.0 with Evans at the helm. Now, the 0.2 doesn't really. We're pretty much throwing the same amount of interceptions with both guys.
Yeah, so I mean, Mazzoli was known for throwing picks outside of that one season where he protected the football. So seeing interceptions get tossed, it's one of those things where it's a bummer. You hate seeing it, but it doesn't really. It's one of those. We got used to it with Mazzoli hopefully Evans will protect the ball better going forward, but it is what it is.
Yeah. And now we look at the rushing game, and I know that Mazzoli isn't running the ball or Evans really, but I just like to look at how the team is performing overall after Mazzoli's injury. So we have 92.2 yards rushing per game when Mazzoli was in there, and now we have 95 yards rushing per game with Evans. A slight increase. I think you'd kind of expect that with your starting quarterback going down.
Yeah, it makes sense. I'm actually kind of surprised that the total was so low considering how well Sean Thomas Erlington was playing early in the year, but I guess he was contributing not just on the ground but in the passing game as well. I still think this team misses him as well as Cameron Marshall played against the Red Blacks. I really wish that STE was still on the field because I think he was in for a very, very big season. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, he brings a different dimension than Cam Marshall. I mean, he's going to be – he's more of an athletic guy. He's going to be jumping over people. And, you know, he was playing really well overall, catching the ball, blocking, all that good stuff. Yeah, it sucks. Hopefully he's back by the end of the season. Now, if we look at the offensive line, we have 1.4 sacks against per game. With Mazzoli, 1.75 sacks against per game with Evans. So not much of a change there.
Under two, I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now we're going to look at the defensive side of the ball. 18.6 points against per game with Mazzoli, 20 points against per game while Evans is at quarterback. So not much of a change there. The defense is balling out. It has been all season.
Yeah, that's look, 20 points per game, that's tremendous. Yeah. Under 20 points per game is tremendous. Like, splitting hairs here, man. Like, that's you tell me they're allowing less than three touchdowns a game, there's a reason why the Ticats are 7-2.
Absolutely. And now a little bit of a surprising stat to me was 120.6 yards rush yards given up per game with Mazzoli, and 100.75 rush yards given up against with Evans. You know, it seems that recently there's been some big games rushing against us. But I guess they've been improving since Mazzoli went down.
I mean, they did. Mazzoli was in the game for the 200-yard rushing by Standback, and I think the Riders had a 100-yard game against him. I guess it's really only been John White since then that's really gashed him. So maybe we've been a little bit too hard on the run defense. And as you said, clearly they're improving. A 20-yard difference over the course of the last four games. I mean, they've played Andrew Harris in that span. They gave up 125 to John White. They had Moses Madu in this one. They played William Powell a second time. So, I mean, maybe we've maybe what this shows is we've been a little bit too hard on the Ticats when it comes to the run D.
I'm thinking so. It seems to me that they give up a lot one game and then they'll bounce back.
Yeah.
So hopefully there's not a next game of giving up a lot. Hopefully they just keep around, you know, and I could go for less than 100 yards rushing per game. Even that number is a little bit big, but
yes, I would prefer to be under triple digits as well.
Yeah. They are improving. So in the pass defense, 266 passing yards against per game, with Mazzoli, 289 passing yards against per game with Evans. So that's a little bit of the decline, but, you know, they had a tremendous game last game against Ottawa. We're going to see coming up against teams like Winnipeg, Toronto's decent at passing the ball. Teams like Edmonton and Calgary, those are going to be the big test for this secondary.
Well, and the thing is too, and it's something I think everyone needs to be mindful of, is sometimes team like in this game in particular, Dominic Davis threw for 238 yards, and you add in Jonathan Jennings 31, like that's 269 yards that the Red Blacks threw for in this game. Not a ton of yards, but still a healthy chunk. They were down for most of the game and pretty much, like, they had 46 pass attempts in this game to 13 rushing attempts. So there's a reason why. And four of those rushing attempts were Dominic Davis. I'm not sure. They might have all been scrambles. So they could have been at a 50-9 play calling pass to run. You know what I mean? Like, he ran the ball four times, but if those were all pass plays and he just took off with them, like, there's, you know what I mean? Like, teams, when they're down, throw the ball more. It's as simple as that. And teams that are up tend to run the ball more. You know what I mean? So it's like, you can't just look at these numbers in a vacuum. You kind of have to take into account the situation. And if we look at the Ticats, for the most part this season, they've been playing ahead. In this game against Ottawa, they never didn't have the lead. It was either tied when the game started, or they were up. They never trailed against Ottawa. When you're not trailing, you're giving up more pass yards because teams are passing more. Late in the game, they gave up a bunch of pass yards when they're playing the pre. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, those numbers have gone up, but I think a lot of that can be due to they're winning and teams have to throw the ball to pick up chunk yards to get themselves back in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not just black and white. There's gray areas in here. And the last stat I'd like to bring to your attention on the defensive side of the ball is 3.6 sacks per game when Mazzoli was around, 1.75 sacks per game with Evans in these four games. So
you would think, you would think that there'd be a correlation with higher sacks for more passing yards, right? But apparently not.
Mm-hmm. No, it's dipped a bit. Obviously, the defensive line is still playing tremendous, but it'd be hard to keep up that pace of, 3.5 sacks a game.
Oh, yeah. That's like, what's that over the course of a full season? That's like 60 some odd sacks. That's a big chunk. That's a big number there.
Yep. So those are just, I was going to touch on some special teams, but the special teams numbers aren't. It all depends on how many time the team punts, and
yeah,
the averages
exactly.
Don't really, matter. So, but yeah, I just like to throw out some of the offensive defensive stats in the five games Mazzoli was in there and the four games since he's been injured.
Well, I'm glad you did that research, Mike. So with this all, with thinking about this and bringing this up, where do you think this team goes from here? Do you think they have another 7-2 second half of the season and finish at 14-4? They take a little bit of a dip. Is this still a double-digit win team? Are you like me and feel that the East final, the East division itself, runs through the hammer? What's kind of your thoughts on where the team goes from here? And are you as bullish on their opportunities to win a championship as I am?
Well, if you look at the games ahead, I think that BC is a win. I'm going to say that's a win. I know it's going to be tough. Anything could happen on the West Coast. Toronto, that's going to be a win. So that's 9. And then you go on that West Coast swing, which is going to be tough. But I think they can win games in Calgary. They've shown that they can play really well in Edmonton year after year. So I think those are winnable games. I can see this team. I can see this team being 12-6, 11-7, something like that, or maybe even better. I think this team has a chance to obviously set the record for the best in regular season record that the Ticats have ever had. I think that's very doable. And I think that they are serious contenders for a Grey Cup. To get through the East isn't going to be super easy, but it'll be an easier task than going to the West. So, and then once they get there, I think they can beat any team in the West, really. I mean, we beat Calgary already. We're coming up to play Edmonton. I think they're a beatable team, even though they're very good. I think Winnipeg's beatable with Strebler at the helm. So I have very high expectations for this team in the second half.
They beat every team in the West, but the one they haven't played yet.
Yep.
So. They split with Saskatchewan. They beat BC. They beat Calgary. They beat Winnipeg. I feel comfortable saying at minimum they'll beat Edmonton at least once. You look at the schedule the rest of the season, and like you said, BC, I'm not going to say – like I'm not saying these are wins, but I'm saying winnable games. BC, winnable game. Toronto, winnable game. At Calgary, that's a tough one. Winning in McMahon is not easy, but the Stamps don't look like the Stamps of the last decade. They are a beatable team. We just saw them lose to the Alouettes at home. They've lost a couple games at home. That is a winnable game. You said they go into Commonwealth when they play play Edmonton. They play them tough. That's a winnable game. Winnipeg, that's going to be tough, but if Matt Nichols isn't there and it's Chris Strebler, that's a winnable game. At home against Edmonton, winnable game. At home to the Red Blacks, winnable game. On the road to Montreal, that'll be tough. The Owls are definitely getting better, but there's no reason that there is not a game left on the schedule that I don't think the Ticats can win. And I have not said that about this team a lot of years that we've been doing the podcast or a lot of years that I've been watching this team. But they're, yes, that three-game Western road trip, Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg, that's daunting. But that would be daunting no matter how good of a team they were. They could be undefeated and you'd look at that run and go, that's going to be tough. It's tough to win on the road. But the Ticats have won every home game they played so far. you look at who they have left at home, and it's like it's the Argos twice, the Red Blacks, and Edmonton. Like those are four winnable games. They go 9-0 at home. You go 500 on the road. You're at 13 wins. Like there, to me, there's no reason this team can't obliterate the all-time win record in an 18-game season for this team. There is not a game on the schedule that I look at and go, wow, this is the game they will lose. You know what I mean? Yes, the Calgary game. Yes, the Edmonton game. Yes, the Winnipeg game. Those are tough games. Every game. To win in the CFL is difficult, no matter the team. It's going to be tough this week in BC. But I see no reason why this team can't get to 12, 13, 14 wins. I really don't.
No, neither do I, actually. I mean, yeah, it's going to be the three-game stretch is going to be very interesting because, yeah, they're going to be tough, but I truly believe that they could win all three of those games. You know, they probably won't. They probably maybe two out of three would be nice, but I think that they match up well with all of those teams. Any team in the CFL, they match up well with.
So this brings up an interesting question. We were tagged in a tweet earlier today on Monday from our boy Claudio, and he asked a question. I'm paraphrasing a bit here, but he said basically, which team was better, that juggernaut from 2015 or the current 2019 team? And this to me is a great question because I saw it as I left work, and I literally spent the 40-minute bus ride home wondering and debating which team from which year was the better team. That 2015 team was blowing people out left, right, and center, and was just – they were untouchable almost until Kolaros got hurt. And then you look at this team, and they had some blowouts early in the year, but they're grinding out wins, and they've maintained that winning edge even with the loss of their starting quarterback. So – I think I have to give the edge to the current team. You know, mm-hmm. Like I'm convinced, and I've said this numerous times, and I will say this probably until the day I die, that I believe if Zach Kolaros doesn't get hurt, that 2015 team wins the Grey Cup running away. I think they win 14, 15 games that year. Like I think I can't remember who they lost to. I think they were 8-3 at the time. And I honestly, if Kolaros doesn't get hurt, I honestly believe that they could have won every game the remainder of the season and rolled to the Grey Cup. I'm not as confident that this team can win the Grey Cup because, again, you know, it's a backup quarterback. You're never certain when you have a guy that's inexperienced. But I think based on what we've seen since the one key similarity is the loss of the starting quarterback, the Ticats went into a bit of a tailspin. They were 8-3. They finished, I think it was 10-8 that year. This year, what did he go down? They went to 4-1 in the win, mm-hmm. They've been they were 4-1 when Mazzoli got hurt. They've been 3-1 since. I think I got to give the edge to the 2019 team, even though I still think that 2015 team would have won the Grey Cup, and I'm not sure about if the 2019 team will. I think based on what we've seen, I think I got to say the 2019 team is a little bit better.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with you on that. Just the way
tough,
that
though,
they,
right?
What's that? It's tough. Yeah, because 2015 was the best Ticat team I've seen in some time. I mean, the offensive cohesion on that team was tremendous. You know, the defense was really good. But I think that this version of the team, the lines are better. The offensive line is better. The defensive line is better. You know, the secondary, you could go either way. The running back, I'd have to go with Gable at the time. You know, he's in his prime, basically. It's a tough question, but I'm gonna lean in the moment, and I'm gonna say this team's better.
I think the 2019 team is deeper.
Yes. Yeah. Canadian depth, everything really. It's just, you know, we had some injuries on the offensive line. They bring some guys in that were backups, and you know, you don't really see a big drop off. So yeah, I'll agree with you on that.
Yeah, I think maybe the 2015 team was more talented in the starting lineup. You know what? And even that I'm not entirely comfortable saying, but I'll lean there. But I think with the amount of guys we've seen step up in the receiving core, with at one point this team was this team started nine Canadians in a game this year, and the backups have come in, and like Simone Lawrence was suspended two games. Nick Schurtle came in and led the team in tackles both games. You know what I mean? Like, you have Tunde Adeleke playing safety, and behind him is Mike Daly, who was the team starting safety a year ago. So I just think the depth on this team this year is one of the deeper teams I think I've seen, Ticats or otherwise, in a very long time. There are so many playmakers on offense. There are so many playmakers on defense. We're seeing special teams just be otherworldly. We saw that in 2015 as well. I don't know. I think that they're like, you had, what was it? Eric Harris. Was it Eric Harris, Taylor Reed, and Simone Lawrence in the linebacking core? Like, that's really good.
Yeah. So,
like, I think, like, Eric Harris in the NFL. So it's very clear. Like, Delvin Bro went to the NFL that year in 2015. Like, the 2015 team, I think, was the better team starting-wise. I think the 2019 team is deeper, and I think that that's why I take them as the better overall team versus the 2015 team.
Yeah, you know, one big thing is you didn't have Speedy B in the receiving core, really.
No, I mean, he didn't.
Occasionally he'd get in there, but I don't think we had a guy that could make those explosive plays, you know, those big, long exciting plays like Brandon Banks could or can in the receiving core. So, yeah, there's a lot of good things from both of those teams, but I'm going to have to go with 2019. I think that they're better suited with their quarterback coming in and everything else. I think it's just going to work out better for us in the end.
Yeah, I think we're going to retweet this one and add a comment and maybe even try to add a poll and see what sort of our listeners think. And we'll come back to this next week and see what everyone says, because I think this is a really good question, a really good thing that we could sit around and debate for a very long time. It's kind of the what if versus the what we have now. But man, that was a good question from him, and it gave us some good content here. So thank you, Claudio, for tagging us in that tweet, and hopefully our answers suffice, and we can get some good dialogue going the rest of the week before this game against BC coming up, because this was a fun question. CFL news, Mike, there's really only one thing I want to talk about, and mostly because I kind of want to make your head explode, and that is the word out of Toronto from our boy, Justin Dunk, who said that the Argos were shopping star running back, do I put that in quotes, James Wilder Jr. The initial, as soon as I saw the news, the first thing that popped into my head was, he's going to be a Ticat, isn't he? And Mike, if James Wilder Jr. was traded to the Hamilton Tiger Cats, would this be your version of Chad Owens? When I lost my mind initially when Chad Owens signed with the Ticats, would this be your version of that?
I think it would have to be. I've been going after James for not on a consistent basis, but every once in a while throwing a little jab at him on Twitter. It would be tough at first, but hey, if he dons the black and yellow and he is a productive player, my mind will change pretty quickly, just like yours did with Chad Owens. So if it happens, so be it. You know, he's not an Argo anymore, so I'll embrace him fully. But I don't think it will. I don't think it's in the cards, but maybe. Maybe.
Where do you think he's going? Because I think he's getting traded. I do think he's getting traded. Where do you think he ends up?
That's a tough one. If you look at the, you know, the running backs around the league, there's not many huge openings. I'm sure someone would take a chance on him because he has shown that he can be, especially in that first year, those first nine games, he was really, really good. But he's fallen off the map ever since, and maybe that's to do with the offensive line not blocking for him properly, because he is getting hit in the backfield quite a bit. But I just can't think of anyone right off the top of my head. Does anyone come into your mind?
No. What about trading him to Edmonton, and then Edmonton can trade us back CJ Gable?
Oh, I'd take that. I'd take that. Gable's still a very productive running back.
Yeah. Also, it just dawned on me, what number does James Wilder Jr. wear? 32. Can you imagine how apoplectic some Ticats fans would be to see someone else wearing 32?
Yeah.
Could be ugly. Honestly, I'm kind of with you, Mike, like in all seriousness. Saskatchewan doesn't need a back. Edmonton doesn't need a back. Winnipeg obviously doesn't need a back. Running back is the least of BC's concerns. I don't think Calgary needs one, quite frankly. I mean, they got those savings with Bo going on the sixth game, so they probably have, 150 to 200 grand to kind of play with there. So perhaps that's enough to kind of absorb Wilder. Maybe he goes there for the rest of the season and plays well and plays for a championship caliber team. You look in the East, obviously Toronto's out of the mix, they're trading him. Montreal does not need a back. They have William Stanback and of course Jeremiah Johnson, so I think they're fine. Ottawa could use him, but is he the difference between Ottawa going from three games under 500 and pretty much not even close to being a playoff contender to being a playoff contender? I don't think so. Then you got the Ticats, who, like, I don't think need him, but I mean, if he can go back to being the player he saw his rookie year,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, if Sean Thomas Erlington's healthy, no, the Ticats don't go anywhere near him, but Argos becoming Ticats, Ticats becoming Argos, it's something that happens quite frequently. If I was to rank the teams from sort of, you know, 1 to 8 on where he lands, I think my top three in no particular order would be Calgary, Ottawa, and Hamilton.
Yeah, and if you think about it, James would kind of fit in with that hard-nosed running back type style, you know, the hard-nosed city like Hamilton. I know it's changed over the years, but, you know, that mentality of the team. I could see the Ticats fans getting behind him if he started, you know, running over people. And being athletic like he was in the first half of that his rookie season.
And he's good in the passing game. I can see, you know, screen passes, stuff like that. I don't know. I could see him being pretty productive in this offense. And we have to remember, Tommy Condell spent the last couple of years in Toronto was, true. I think he was the receivers coach. He might have been the running back coach when Wilder burst on the scene the year they won the Grey Cup. So, I mean, there could be a guy who knows how to use him and wants to use him. I don't want to see this. I, like you, I'm not a huge fan. I don't dislike him as much as you do. But I'm kind of bracing myself for this. Ever since Chad Owens became a Ticat for 1 year, I mean, nothing surprises me. So I think you should brace yourself. It wouldn't shock me if this happened, but I think for your sake, I hope it doesn't. But again, he comes here, he plays well. We're going to cheer him just like when Chad Owens came here and played well, I cheered him just like any other player. You come in, you play well, you help this team win. I don't really care about what happened before you got here.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. You know, you don't like players, but your feelings can change pretty quick. They're on your team.
Absolutely. Okay, let's talk about the other three games from the past week, Mike. First game was Winnipeg beating the BC Lions 32-16. I mean, the Lions stink, 1-8. There's not really much to talk about there. But the big story coming out of this one was obviously the injury to Matt Nichols. We found out on Monday that he has been put on the 6-game injured list. They're expecting him to miss between 4 and 6 weeks. What do you think the Bombers' chances with Chris Streveler are here? I know a lot of people are bullish on Streveler. I think the jury's still out on him. We haven't really seen him develop as a passer. But now he's going to get kind of a 6-game audition here. We saw Nick Arbuckle probably make himself a fair bit of coin in his audition as a stamp starter with him hitting free agency at the end of the year. And I'm sure someone's going to give him some money to become their franchise quarterback. Chris Streveler's got his opportunity. But what do you think overall without Matt Nichols? He's kind of the whipping boy in Winnipeg, a little very similar to Jeremiah Mazzoli here in Hamilton. What do you think?
Yeah,
can the Bombers keep this up with Nichols out of the lineup? Can they maintain first in the West and still find a way to get to the, get to host the West Final in Winnipeg without him there for 6 weeks?
I think he's even more of a whipping boy than Mazzoli is in him.
Oh, definitely more. Yeah. But you compare them. They're guys who produce, but that for some reason there's a segment of the fan base that just absolutely hates them.
Yeah, I think that Streveler, I'm with you. I think he's an exciting player. I think he's, you know, he can run the ball really well, but he hasn't proven to me that he can be an effective passer in this league yet. So the jury's still out on him. I think he'll be able to, you know, tread water. I think they'll float around 500 while he's in there. I think he'll be able to win a couple games. And the Winnipeg will be all right. But I think they're definitely better off with Nichols. So hopefully, I'm not even sure what his injury is. I'm pretty sure it's a shoulder.
Yeah, but I think it's a separated shoulder.
Yeah. So I think they'll do all right. I think they'll float around 500 while Streveler's behind center.
Okay, game two was Edmonton beating Toronto 41-26. Full disclosure, I did not watch any of this game. I was out with friends doing an escape room, and by the time I got home, there was like 4 minutes left, and Edmonton was up by 2 scores, and I said, well, I'm not going to waste my time putting this on. So we're not going to talk about anything specific from this game, Mike, but I'm going to use this to catapult into a larger discussion about a pair of teams in the East, the basement dwellers in our division, and ask you a simple question, Mike. Who do you think at this point, records aside, which team is worse? Is it Toronto or Ottawa? Because they're both really bad football teams right now.
I'm gonna say Ottawa is worse at this moment. Their offense is just horrendous to watch. Their defense is not bad. They keep them in games usually. Toronto, their offense has been showing me some things. I think that they're improving slowly. I think their special teams is pretty darn good with Chris Rainey back there, but their defense is atrocious. So I'm gonna go with Toronto's a little bit better just because I think they're better on offense and special teams.
Yeah, I think I gotta go with you on that one. And I know people are gonna say, oh, you hate the Red Blacks and that's why you're dissing them. But Santino Filoso, my colleague at Three Down Nation, had this written in his game piece after the Red Blacks loss. For those keeping count at home, the Red Blacks have mustered a pathetic 3 touchdowns in their last 77 possessions. 77 possessions and 3 touchdowns. That is unfathomably bad. And yeah. I don't know if you saw the news today, Mike, but the rumor is that Joe Pau-Pau could be taking over as offensive coordinator. And sorry, Red Blacks fans, if you love screen passes 90% of the time, then you're going to love the Joe Pau-Pau offense. But, I mean, yes, Ottawa's defense is spectacular. Toronto's is not. But you beat teams by scoring more points. And Ottawa, like I said, 3 touchdowns offensively on their last 77 drives. That is some 2006 garbage Ticats play there, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that is...
With the way they are, there's what quarterback, like their quarterbacking is atrocious. They mismanage that completely. They have really one star receiver in Brad Sinopoli. Their running game hasn't been much to speak about. Like they have almost nothing offensively going on for them, and there's kind of no quick fix for them either. It's not like they can bring in some quarterback that'll turn this thing around. Like Henry Burris ain't walking through that door, if you know what I mean. Yeah. I think they mismanaged this very poorly in the offseason, and it wouldn't shock me if at the end of the year the Argos finished higher in the standings than the Red Blacks.
No, I wouldn't be shocked with that either because, like I said, I see improvements in the Argonauts. Their secondary is still really, really bad, but offensively they've seemed to turn a corner somewhat.
Well, I don't think the Argos are going to lose 64-14 on Labor Day, so... I mean, no. As long as that doesn't happen for them, they've definitely shown improvement. I look at the Red Blacks, and I honestly, it wouldn't shock me if they didn't win another game the rest of the year.
Yeah, I could see it. I mean, how bad their offense is, that says it all. You have to score points in the CFL, and they're not going to score a lot with their defense. Not enough, anyways.
Game 3 of the week was, I think, unanimously the best game of the weekend. The Montreal Alouettes went into McMahon Stadium and came out with a 40-34 victory in double overtime. This game had it all. Controversy on a touchdown by the Alouettes. Roughing the passer calls kept the game alive for Montreal. Eric Rogers, was his foot in? Was it not on the last throw of the game? Just this game was incredible. To see the Owls go into Calgary, make that comeback, and to win the game... It's simple for me, Mike, in this one. My question to you is, are the Montreal Alouettes back?
Listen, I think they are. I think they're going to be a playoff team this year. They have a shot, man. I mean, with the way that Vernon Adams is playing, he's just an exciting guy to watch. He had his mistakes in that game, threw a couple picks, but really bounced back. The way that he can run the ball, he juked that guy out of his shoes. In the open field, that one play, it's funny to think that about a year ago, he was getting booed off the field and the Johnny chants were coming down for Johnny Manziel. And he sounded off against the Montreal Alouettes fans after that game. And now it looks like he's poised to be the next good, reliable starting quarterback for the Montreal Alouettes.
Yeah, it's funny too because the Owls, BC had him on their neg list. They traded him to Montreal for a first round pick. They traded him to Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan traded him to Hamilton. Hamilton was trying to trade him, but June Jones was too honest and said they were trying to trade him. So they ended up cutting him. He goes to Montreal. You mentioned it. He starts. The Johnny Chants come out. Manziel gets an opportunity. Falls flat in his face. He's out of the league. Pipkin takes over. Looks okay. Pipkin gets hurt. Adams comes in. Looks good. He gets hurt. Pipkin comes in. They lose. Adams goes back in. Orchestrates this victory. It really does look like he's finally – like I remember when the talk of was him coming to the league and everyone was very high on him and thinking this could be the next guy. It looks like that hype is going to pay off now. He's had a few years and a few systems. He's gotten a chance to learn the game, which I think is the most important thing for a quarterback. I think you rarely, if ever, see a guy come in and dominate or even play well right away. It takes some time. Look at all the starting quarterbacks in the CFL to start this year. Not one of them came into the league and was a starter right away. You spend your time as a backup. You learn the game. Then when you get your opportunity, you make the most of it. That's what most quarterbacks do. And I think that's what Vernon Adams has done. And look, the Owls are a division rival. And if I had my way, the Ticats would go 18-0 every year. And every other team in the CFL would go 0-18. I know that's not possible. But you know what I mean? Like that's I don't care how other teams do. I'm a Ticat fan. But it's nice to see the Owls kind of, like change is nice. You brought this up before we recorded. With Calgary kind of taking a step back this year, it's nice to see the teams who are dominating, who are good, change from year to year. It looks to me like the Owls are poised to be the second place team in the East. And I said this on Twitter, and I'll try my best to refrain from salty language. But the Owls look like a team that's going to completely F up that fourth place West team that everyone says, oh, they're going to waltz through the East and they're going to beat all the crappy teams in the East. And they're going to go to Montreal in the first week of the playoffs and get beat like 40-6. You know what I mean? Like that's what this kind of has the feel of to me. Like the Owls are going to finish like 8-10 or 9-9 or whatever. And everyone's going to go, oh, the East is a cakewalk. And, you know, the Ticats don't have their quarterback. So whatever West team gets in there, they're just going to waltz all the way. It's going to be a West-West final. And then it's going to be all over the first week of the playoffs when Montreal rolls up 40 points on them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can totally see that. They're a very good team right now. They're offensively coming together. Their defense has been, you know, they have a lot of really good players on the defensive side of the ball. And, Beattie's, he's been up and down his whole career, but it looks like this year he's really got it together. And I was waiting for that to happen because, the kid has such a strong leg and he just had a little bit of accuracy issues. But, I think that the Alouettes can do some damage this year. Hopefully they don't do any damage against the Tiger Cats. But yeah, they're going to be, I think they are for real, to answer your question.
And the other thing I want to mention here, they made a coaching change super late. It was like the eve of training camp where they relieved Mike Sherman of his duties and brought in Kahari Jones. This is the second time in 3 years that we've seen a team hire a coach super late. The Argos did it, hiring like Mark Trestman and Jim Popp like the end of February, beginning of March. And we always talk about, man, you got to get your coach in, you got blah, blah, blah. The Argos went on to win the Grey Cup that year. The Owls look like they're poised to become a contender again. I mean, can we stop? And I'm guilty of this, so I'm not throwing this on anyone else. I'm talking about myself as well. I think we just got to stop like worrying about when teams make coaching hires because with what we've seen the last couple of times it's happened, it doesn't make a damn bit of difference.
No, and I also think we need to stop judging young quarterbacks so quickly. You know, you look at a guy like Vernon Adams Jr., and it takes years for these guys to really, get their feet wet and really be comfortable in this game. And a lot of these young quarterbacks probably have the talent, but the teams don't have the patience or the fans don't have the patience for them to come along. But I think that's another thing we have to stop doing is judging young quarterbacks so quickly.
I absolutely agree with you. Like I said, quarterbacks come into this league and they don't dominate from day one. And Vernon Adams is no different than any other guy. Bided his time, was able to develop, and now he looks like he's poised to become a star at quarterback for the Montreal Alouettes, or if not a star, then at least a reliable, long-term, viable option at the quarterback position, which is something they've been looking a very long time for. Mike, it's the first time in a long time that we've done this, but you've got a bozo of the week to hand out. So who are you railing against this week?
Well, my bozo of the week is Mr. Corey Chamberlain, Argonauts coach, obviously. He bothers me because – not because I want the Argos to do well or anything. I just don't understand his logic of punting the ball away down by two possessions, you know, whether it be 10 points or 14 points, when he has like 2.5 minutes left. I don't understand this just giving up the game. This is the CFL. Anything can happen. Go for it on third down. You got to get points at this point. I don't understand why he just gives up and gives the ball away to the other team. He's done it on at least two or three occasions this year. And, you know, if I'm an Argo fan, it's driving me up the wall. So he is my bozo of the week.
As a Ticat fan, though, I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah. Keep doing your thing, Corey.
All right, Mike, let's talk about this week's upcoming game. Our 7-2 Ticats head to BC Place this Saturday for a late 10 p.m. Eastern kickoff against the 1-8 BC Lions. These two teams met a couple weeks ago in a thriller. Ticats made a furious comeback to win 35-34 with under a minute left to play. Obviously, you look at the records, you look at the way these two teams have played, and the Ticats should be the obvious favorite. But maybe it's just the inherent Ticats pessimism in me. But I am a little concerned about this. The start time is late. It's a West Coast game. Like these are not easy games for any team to win, let alone teams from the East. So I'm not as bullish on a victory in this one as I was a couple of weeks ago when these two teams played in Hamilton. Mike, are you with me, or are you supremely confident that the Ticats will emerge from this game at 8-2?
Well, I said I was worried about the game a couple weeks ago against BC, and it turned out to be pretty damn close, 36-35. But I'm going to go the opposite way. I'm going to say that, you know, that I don't have any real worries about this game. I know that anything can happen on every given day, and I said earlier that you know, there's a lot of great parity in this league right now, even with the Toronto's and BC's of the league. But listen, I believe the Ticats had 4 sacks against the BC Lions last time they played, and that's kind of low going up against the BC Lions, even though any other team, 4 sacks would be a great accomplishment. I think they're going to do better than that in this game. You know, BC, Mike Riley was under pressure, and he was sacked a million times the last game they played. They played pretty well against Hamilton last time, but I just don't see them having a repeat performance of that. I think the Tiger Cats win this, you know, by 7 or 10 pretty easily.
All right. I like your confidence. I'll take some of that, bottle it up. You like the sacks in this one. Garrett Davis going to have a big game?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think your boy Dylan Wynn's going to have 1 or 2. You know, they're going to eat Mike Riley up, because, you know, it's one of the best defensive lines in the league, and other teams have been sacking him on like 6 or 7 times a game. So I don't see why this defensive line can't get to him 6 or 7 times.
So Brian Burnham, does he burn us again this week? Is it a big game for him, or do they keep him in check?
I think they're going to look at what he did last game, and they're going to keep him in check. You're not going to completely shut him down. He's going to have some catches, but he's not going to have the monster game he did last time they played.
All right, Mike, you're swaying me. You're swaying me on this one. I'm still a little
John
concerned.
White's not going to run. John White's not going to run all over us this time, because, you know, our defense has, I think they've figured it out, maybe the rushing attack. So I'm going to say John White is not going to have a big game, and Brian Burnham is not going to have a big game, and Mike Riley's going to be sacked on many occasions. So because of all of that, the Ticats are going to win this one pretty comfortably.
All right. I like what you're saying. I'm buying what you're selling. We're going to come back a week from now and talk about an 8-2 football team, and all heading into Labor Day, 10 games, 8-2. Love it. I mean, I'll be happy at 7-3, to be perfectly honest with you, but 8-2, 8-2 has a nice ring to it.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Coming in 8-2 to face the Argonauts and beat the crap out of them. I mean, what else could you ask for?
Couldn't ask for anything else. It's going to be a nice, sunny, warm Labor Day afternoon in Hamilton with an 8-2 football team. I like the sounds of that.
And it's an afternoon game this year, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, 1 o'clock kickoff. Path? Thank Lord.
Okay, there you go. Right.
Praise
good, good,
Odin
good.
For that one. I mean, the last time they did an afternoon Labor Day game, it was like 8 million degrees. So that's when they started going to the night ones. But then, of course, we had the massive weather delay, which I would not want to sit through again. So I will sit through some heat and then come home to my nice air-conditioned palace and cool down then, maybe even take a shower, then have to sit through a two-hour rain delay. So, I'm glad the game's back. And then I come home and we get to watch the second game. And then, I don't know, I guess we record a podcast the day of the game. It'll be a lot of fun, right. Won't it?
Yeah. We'll see.
We will see. My throat. I mean, I bring the cowbell to the games now so that my throat, I can actually speak afterwards instead of yelling. So we should be good to go. But that's for another week at another time. That was Podski Weave for this week, though, Mike. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat them raw.
Eat them raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.